Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast and Aston Villa podcast. As usual, I'm your host, James Rushton, once again joined by Daniel Raza. How are you getting on, mate?
Hi, mate. I mean, apart from the fact that there's not a win in sight for me to celebrate, I'm all right. What about you?
All good, man. I think Villa are doing a bit better than they were doing, but still nothing to write home or shout about at all. I think we got a few matches to sum up because we missed out a few. I wasn't really feeling recording about Villa last Sunday after the loss to Baggies and, of course, the loss to Brentford. But I feel a lot more positive now after the Stoke game. So we've got quite a packed schedule today. So let's condense the talk. We got to talk about Brentford, of course. We've got to talk about Baggies. So let's combine them and have a general discussion about those two games. Because I know you watched the Brentford one and the Baggies one. But that Brentford one, it was a bit rough, wasn't it?
Brentford was an example of, I think it was a full-on example of what our team is and what it was missing. It was basically the ideal side that we would like to have when Dean Smith has a little bit more time on his hands and gets things together. In fact, we need to be better than Brentford, of course. I mean, that's what we need to be. But I think we clearly saw what was missing. That Brentford side isn't necessarily player by player more talented than the Villa side that we have right now, but they wanted to get to the ball first every single time. There was a lot more passion. There was a lot more running around. That press was a lot more consistent from them. And I think for a neutral who might have been watching that, they're looking at that and they see one team who very clearly wants to win in comparison to the other. And I think that was clearly what we had missing and clearly what Dean Smith actually lacks now that he's with us. And I think that's something that is definitely going to be frustrating him. There just was more energy on the Brentford side and just a better press. And I think that's exactly what led to our defeat.
Do you think Villa were anything at all towards unfortunate in that match? I think they defended quite well. It was the last minute, the last chance of the game they scored. And Villa, like Dean Smith said on the weight of things, Villa had the best chances and they did. They had two clear-cut chances from Albert Adoma for one and Conor Hourihan who had the other and they both failed to score. But looking back, I don't think any team had any better chances than those two that Villa had.
No, but I think that, you know, the chances that Villa did have, I think were coming from a desperate angle. Like I think we only really started getting those chances when we'd realized that we weren't really breaking Brentford down. And yeah, fair enough, we gave it somewhat of a go, but Brentford just didn't stop. You know, their defending was high energy all throughout the match, so it meant that we were frustrated. It meant that we were frustrated in terms of trying to get the ball through to strikers. And when we did get opportunities, we were under pressure and we just couldn't finish. And I think that's another wider problem that we have at the moment. Nobody bar Tammy Abraham can finish right now. And that is a totally different problem, but Brentford just did not stop up until the end. And I think when it got to the 80th minute or so, you watching that as a Villa fan know that it's over. We're not nicking a goal here. But Brentford did not stop. They kept knocking at the door. And I think what's really annoying me is this defeatist attitude from players walking around the pitch, you know, after the 70th minute and just kind of thinking to themselves, well, we're not, you know, just feeling sorry for themselves. Do you know what I mean? We had the Sheffield United come back and that was fair enough. But, you know, a side like Brentford who's coming at us and does not want to lose, we have no chance against.
So I don't feel like we're going to give a match ball for Brentford, are we? It was just, you can probably say Mings did all right.
Mings is the only guy who looks like he's stepping up and being a leader right now.
But you wouldn't go, yeah, anyone deserved a match ball from that one, especially the next game against Baggies, because Villa probably played all right, and they let in two really soft goals, but they didn't actually ever look like a threat. Tammy Abraham missed a really good chance against West Brom, so we're moving on to this game now. I think the game changes if Abraham scores, but he doesn't. And Villa let in two really soft goals. I think one's a header from the corner of the box and the other is just a weak shot from outside the box. And it's just disaster from there.
Do you know what? That match was frustrating because West Brom basically walked in, didn't have to do anything, and walked off. That's what it looked like. Genuinely.
No, that's what it felt like.
Am I right?
That's what it felt like, mate. That's exactly what it felt like.
They walked in, scored a goal. Sweet. Villa players, you know, walking around the pitch, it's kind of like, yeah, all right then. Fair enough. You know what I mean? There was no urgency. Nobody was like, you know what? This is a derby. We need to get a win for our fans here. There was none of that. And I get that the atmosphere, you know, completely turns on its head. And there's been a lot of booing. There's been a lot of that. But, you know, you need to dig yourself out of these holes. And I mean, stop feeling sorry for yourselves, because when was the last time we took the lead in any game? You know, it's their own fault. do you know what I mean?
Yeah, if people are being negative, I think the one way to change that is through positive performances. But I can't help but think that some of the criticism that's went their way, Conor Hourihan stands out to me. Don't think he's had the best season, mate. I think me and you know that he hasn't had the best season. I think he knows he hasn't had the best season. And when he was substituted off against West Brom, he took a lot of flack for that. He took a fair hit in that game, a lot of jeers and a lot of boos. And I think Dan Bardell said 50-50 of the stadium, either with him or against him. That's bad.
Yeah, it is bad because, you know, as a player, I mean, and Conor Hourihan is a very talented player, right? When it comes to the Championship, you think of a player who can do it all, who's a complete midfielder. Because Conor Hourihan is a complete midfielder, right? He can tackle,
yeah,
break play down, and, you know, he can come forward with the ball and support an attack. You know, he's not far off playing in a number 10 position if he wanted to. But I think that the midfield, I don't want to put all the blame on Conor Hourihan. I think we have a very unbalanced midfield. It doesn't work. I don't think Hourihan and McGinn together work. I don't think Hourihan, McGinn, and a defensive midfielder works. You know, I think one of McGinn, one of Hourihan needs to be dropping a little bit lower or dropping a little bit further back. But I think at the moment it almost seems as though they are having to do a lot of defensive work that they can't handle, because I think the two of them both need a little bit more freedom going forward. And we don't have the ball. We don't have the ball, so they can't necessarily do that as well. I think he's struggling there.
Do you think Hourihan gets compared quite unfairly to McGinn? Because McGinn's an all-action player and not a lot works for him. But he, even if he isn't putting in an effort, it looks due to his style that he is. He's at all elbows, all arse, all tongue. His head's wagging everywhere and running around putting a shift in, it looks like. And because Hourihan's a different type of player, do you think they are compared somewhat unfairly?
They're totally different types of players. You know what I mean? And I don't think it's fair to compare either of them together. You know, if you compared Hourihan to Whelan, again, you know, it's a bit silly. McGinn, I would say, is more of a box-to-box midfielder. He does have to do a lot of the dog work. Hourihan, you rely on him to do a little bit more of the playmaking. But I think with Hourihan, again, it's like, who is he supposed to get the ball to? You know, he's supposed to be supporting players like Jack Grealish, and we don't have anybody ahead of him who's going to be able to support him like that. You know, he needs a little bit more time. He needs a little bit more. I think he's just far too under pressure to do what he wants to be doing, Conor Hourihan. I think that's the way I'd look at it, because there isn't anybody else on that pitch who's doing the defensive work. Do you know what I mean? I think if Whelan,
yeah,
or Jedinak were a little bit more well equipped to do that kind of work, it might mean that Hourihan could be a little bit more free to go forward. I don't think Conor Hourihan has ever had to be the guy in midfield that's winning the ball back. And I think he's struggling, you know, having to put up with all of that right now. And I am being a bit sympathetic, right, 100%. But I get that his performances haven't been great. I don't want to blame the individual, but I just don't think the midfield works as it is. I just don't think it works. When we had Jack Grealish ahead of Hourihan and McGinn, it worked because we had the ball and we were playing through the middle and we were being the attacking side. Right now, under the pressure that we are, we need somebody who's going to break up play a little bit more. And I think that's the complicated matter at hand, really. I think people are expecting Hourihan to do way more than he actually can at the moment.
Do you think he was anywhere near kind of deserving of the reaction that he had when he was substituted off. I think a lot of people have tried to justify in that he was slow getting off the pitch or something like that. Do you think he deserved it?
It's a tough one. I don't want to justify it. I don't want to justify it, but I get that people get frustrated with players when they're not putting in the best performances. You know, Hourihan scored close to 10 goals, was it, last season?
Yeah. Last season,
I think he may well have done.
10, I think.
People are asking, where is it now? I mean, it's not just him, is it? Albert Adoma scored his first goal of the season yesterday, which is ridiculous when you consider how many he scored last season.
It's a bit of a difficult situation, isn't it? On the one hand, you can see why people are frustrated. On the other, I think we do need to grow up and be in that way towards play. Look, criticism's one thing. I think criticism's completely, you know, deserved, but we are quite reactionary at these games and quite angry and abusive. And I don't feel that, you know, when you're wearing that claret and blue, if he was playing for West Brom, give him hell. But we gave Gareth Barry, and right, Gareth Barry's a Villa legend, but we gave him such a good reaction, a good response when he left the pitch. Compare that to Conor Hourihan, who is actually a Villa player right now.
Yeah, but I think
it's a bit odd.
I think Villa fans see 34-year-old Gareth Barry, you know, acing that midfield.
38, mate.
38. Well, there you go. Right? See, a player of that sort of age, you know, acing that pitch, right? Basically, you know, running that midfield. And you compare it to the performances of our players who look defeated. Mm. They're not, you know, playing like, you know, you want them to look like badasses on the pitch, right? You want them to look confident. You want them to look like they've gone onto that pitch knowing what they want to get out of it, you know. And immediately, what we see in terms of the body language is defeatist. And it's negative. And it's resemblant of what we've had to put up with for years, right? And what we want to see is a little bit of confidence. You know, we want to see that the same sort of performances that, and dare I say it, that Bruce was actually able to get out of the players, you know, in last season. You know, when we went on that mad winning run. And I think, genuinely, for Dean Smith, I think the frustration is, we know that all he needs to do is get these players a little bit better motivated, and we will see better performances. Because right now, it's not a question of talent. It is a question of motivation. And we know that because we've seen them pull out better performances.
Yeah, I think Gareth Barry is a good example because of, you know, how good did he look against West Brom? No, against Villa. I'm hurting from losing him. He was my favourite Villa player of all time, I think. But how good did he look against Villa? It's like 38 years old, bossed the game, barely breaking a sweat. And Villa, on the other hand, just looked lost, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it. You know, you look at Glenn Whelan, who's, I think he is 34. Right, and when people talk about experienced players and midfield generals, they're talking more about Gareth Barry. You know what I mean? They're talking more about somebody who goes, you know what? We're going to get a win out of this no matter what. And if we don't, we're going to leave it on the pitch. To be fair, Whelan's been pulling out more of these performances recently as well, but not enough of it. You know, these are the sort of experienced heads that Villa are missing, because right now we've got a lot of players on the pitch who don't quite know what success is. And just seem to hurt whenever things don't go our way. You know, how long has this bad run been going on for? You know, December was a good month. It was good. We were doing really, really well, right? We took one defeat. We took one hit. And all of a sudden, the players don't know what to do with themselves. And it's like, you are the same players that were putting in top performances last month. What is the problem? You know, it is a mental thing. I don't know whether we've got some bad sort of sports psychology going on in the back room, whether we don't have the staff to sort that out. But I think we're all frustrated because the results that are coming out aren't, you know, sort of resemblant of what we are. The amount of sitters that we are missing, you know, the amount of bad finishing that has been coming out of games. And it's like, you try to analyze the matches and try to figure out where things went wrong, why we're losing, what's wrong with the tactics. And it's like, but Hourihan should have tapped that chance in a couple of weeks ago. And El Ghazi should have scored against Stoke when he was one-on-one with the keeper. And I think that's why it's frustrating trying to analyze Villa on a podcast with you right now, James.
Yeah, I've tried to break down games. It's very hard to do. So Villa just really unlucky, I think, is something. And that's a problem. You can't analyse luck. You can't analyse luck. As much as you want to break it down, some teams are luckier than others. Some teams make their own luck and some teams can, you know, dig themselves out. These are really hard things to quantify. And I think Villa, for the most part, if you want to describe them as anything, it's unlucky. Really unlucky. The game just escapes them. And, you know, they ain't their own best friends, mate. I think we've said plenty of times they don't out themselves, but plenty of times I've seen out there, it's sometimes they've got away with stuff, sometimes they haven't. I think a lot of people go back to that winning run against Middlesbrough Derby. We got away with some things in those matches, you know, that we didn't in others. So,
you know what? A lot of it is about swagger.
I'm trying to say, Danny.
Right. A lot about it is believing that you're good enough.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of these YouTube videos of players who are motivated and want to do better. Mings's the other day he put up, it was good to see, right? I like that. But bring that attitude to the pitch. Bring that attitude. It's the same as going to a job interview, or it's the same as going up to somebody in a bar that you like, James, right? You might have everything going for you. Genuinely, right? You might have everything going for you, right? You might have a high-paying job. You might be really, really attractive. But if you go up and walk up to somebody, with the attitude in your own head that you're not good enough, then, you know, nothing's ever going to come out of it, right? Whereas you go into that job interview, you walk up to that person, and, you know, you believe in yourself a little bit more, you're going to get better results. And I think it is genuinely a question of that right now with Villa. And that's what finishing is all about, isn't it? Composing yourself, being at being at peace with where you are. Right, not panicking. You're one-on-one with the keeper. I'm going to put this away. And clearly, what we're seeing a lot of the time now is players thinking in their own heads, this is going wide. This is going over the crossbar. I mean, did you see the El Ghazi chance against Stoke? Or are we not on the Stoke game yet?
Well, we'll go into it. It's a nice seg, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah. We had chances against West Brom as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
Who ran? That was what was...
Best one was Abraham, about 5-10 minutes in, and it's a one-on-one chance, and it is a good save by Sam Johnson, but it's one of those that I think earlier in the season, when we were feeling a bit more present, a bit more cocky with swagger, we'd have buried and run away with the match.
Yeah, you can't really. I think the reason why you struggle is, you know, everything in training, everything in attacking training, leads up to that moment. It leads up to those very few moments that you have, you know, when you're on the attack, that you might get a chance that you can put away. So you fluff that, and suddenly you're thinking to yourself, well, it's not going to get better than that, is it? We're going to start from square one.
No, and it was frustrating. I think we're not really in a position to give a match ball for West Brom because it was a crap game. Villa really, they didn't play badly. They just got hit. West Brom didn't have to work for much, and it was a bit of a giveaway of a result. A bit frustrating. And it led to questions over Dean Smith, mate. We'll get into these before Stoke. Because a lot of people were starting to question, and probably rightly so, Dean Smith and his managerial capabilities at Aston Villa. What did you make of that?
We're clearly in a very difficult situation here, whereby you've got to think short-term and long-term. And honestly, it's a tough one. It is a tough one. I mean, the amount of debates I've had with my dad in the car. You know, every time I come back to Birmingham, always have this kind of conversation about Dean Smith, and it's like, well, you know, where are the results going to come from? You know, nothing has changed since Steve Bruce. We're getting thrashed more than we were under Steve Bruce, and it's like, yeah, we were, but it's about trajectory, and it's about thinking about the stuff. It's can you sacrifice short term success on the pitch for the chance that we might well be in a better position, you know, in a year's time? I think a lot of people are drawing comparisons to Daniel Farke, for example, at Norwich, where it's taken him ages to implement what he wants. But like,
yeah, no, that's a perfect example, really, isn't it? That people are looking at Norwich and hoping for next season, but this is going to be a long term. If it doesn't happen this year, and it looks like it isn't, it's going to be a long-term project. And I'm talking long-term, not next season, a few years. Yeah. which is the reality of it. And I don't think we're all willing to accept that. You reckon?
Well, I think that's it. I think, you know, we're almost going back on the pitch, and we've been in a position where we could reach the playoffs, and we're taking ourselves out of that position, right? Like we can't reach the playoffs now, basically. But when Smith took charge, we very much, you know, we're in a position where we could have made a charge of it. It's a tough one. It really is a tough one. But then again, I understand that, you know, we've got a lot of players who just don't suit the style of football. We really need to change the feeling, you know, around the club. We need to bring in younger, hungrier players, more energetic players, and really we need to stop thinking about experience and stopping the rot now and start thinking about, well, look, we need to move forward. We need something sustainable. And what's sustainable is Andre Green, Courtney House. You know, it's not going to be Jack Grealish, but we need to start. I mean, John McGinn, right? We need to start thinking ahead. And I understand mm-hmm. that we have had to make a bit of a sacrifice for that. We could not spend that much money in January. And Smith is struggling with that midfield right now. But I do think over time, things will get better. I would not rush to the conclusion that we need to sack Dean Smith. 100% we don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to...
No, I don't agree with that at all, mate. It's a bit... I know I agree with you. I don't agree with the sentiment that 5 months, 6 months in, we should be even thinking about a negative reaction to it. Like sacking him. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, I think we have to think about what Dean Smith was going to be judged on when he moved here, right? Like, what were his credentials? What were his job requirements? What was it that he had to do, you know, since moving in? And I think with him, it was never get us promoted this season. I think clearly under Steve Bruce, we were heading in a direction where it was like, whoa, hold on a second, Brucey. Right, we continue on like this and we could have a Sunderland situation going on. Genuinely, right? It was a rapid drop. Whereas Dean Smith, I think, has taken over and they've gone, look, sort this mess out, right? We can't keep spending money. We need a club. We need a team which is gonna be a little bit younger and is gonna be sustainable in the next few years. We can't have a club where when Jack Grealish goes, it's over. We can't have that, you know. When big players leave, it's over. We can't have that. We need to be able to, you know, grow the club a little bit more organically, like he was able to do at Brentford, right? And one of the reasons why Brentford are doing so well right now is because even though Dean Smith went, he'd taken the club to such a point where, you know, somebody else could come through and the club in itself had its own identity. And that's what Smith's trying to do with Villa. And for that to happen, 1 January is simply not enough. There needs to be a preseason. And I think when you look at it like that, it's fine. Keep him there. We're not saying that he's done a great job, but also we're saying that bringing somebody else in right now is not going to fix anything. You know, at least let Dean Smith try to work his magic outside of the pitch for now. And I think perhaps then the results will come.
Let's move on to Stoke then. Yesterday's match, I think... bit of negativity about it in that Villa conceded within the first 5 minutes, which is completely typical. But I think that was really unfortunate. So this is yesterday's match, Villa versus Stoke City. A lot of optimism going into this game, a lot of good feeling. But there's still, you know, a lot of negativity and people weren't really looking forward to it. And I think those feelings were definitely compounded when Villa went under 1-0 within 5 minutes. The way this goal came about needs explaining, Danny, because Alan Hutton had fallen or collapsed on the pitch with a knee injury and it looked really bad. He was actually crying, you know, waving off the fans. He was taken straight off the pitch and might be the last time we see him this season if a recent history of injuries that we know of is anything to go by. We haven't seen Twanzabay and Grealish for ages, so I don't think we'll be seeing Hutton. But Hutton went off and Villa, before they made the substitute, were of course down to 10 men while we were assessing the situation. In this gap of time, Stoke scored. They pinged the ball to the left-hand side where we didn't have, well, their left, where we didn't have a player on our right, Alan Hutton, of course, and scored. They got a free ball in and it should have been stopped, but we were down to 10 men. And they scored because of that within 5 minutes, and Sam Vokes taps home, and it's just madness.
Yeah, and it's
mate.
Not even as though you can look at it and go, well, you can't look at it and go, well, you know what? Hutton being on the pitch wouldn't have made a difference. You know, it 100% would have done. The reason that goal goes in, it's all about the cross, right? I think the players in the box, they've done their best, right? It was a little bit of a back heel from Sam Vokes. Mings has tried to get ahead of him. Kalinic fluffs it just a little bit, but I think the players in the box, they're doing what they can. The reason why that goal goes in is because of the cross, because that ball is allowed to slide across the slide into the box, yeah. Basically, right? And the reason that happened is because Jonathan Codger ends up having to rush all the way back from his forward position and try to mark the I can't remember who it was actually that ended up putting the ball in. Was it
James McLean?
Yeah, I think it was McLean. It was McLean, right? So Codger tried McLean. To get James ahead of McLean. Him, but he's a striker. He's never cutting that out, and inevitably, you know, McLean is able to push that in. El Mohammedi's had to push back to right back, and yeah, you're right. It was a panicky situation. If Hutton's there and El Mohammedi's ahead of him, we're fine. We're absolutely dealing with the situation. But it was all because Hutton was off there that went in.
It was a man down and just too easy to score. But in terms of Villa's general play before we get onto the equaliser, they weren't that bad. And I think a lot of people who probably weren't watching the match were being quite negative, and I think Villa were all right. They needed encouragement from the crowd, don't get me wrong.
I did tweet to the 7500 to Holt account, just joking a little bit when Whelan took a corner. But like, I mean, I'm just messing there, right?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
In general, we're playing 4-4-2. It's a lot better, right? If you're 1-0 down, we're more likely to score like that. We're at least trying to take the ascendancy. And I mean, we created chances. The chances were there. I mean, El Ghazi was one-on-one with the goalkeeper at one point. And, you know, should have scored, but absolutely fluffed his lines. And it is a case of here we go. Like, we're going to miss way more easy opportunities that we're going to put away at the moment. And until we start scoring a few goals, unfortunately, that is the case, right? Because nobody's confident at the moment. We can't finish. But, you know, we created chances. They were there.
Sure, we had the ability to score, but we looked so unconfident in front of goal and it wasn't happening. So Villa went off at half time, really frustrated with themselves. And Dean Smith wasn't happy. The players were looking to tear lumps out of each other, and when they got into the dressing room, and Villa's away crowd, really good, just roared them, got you know, just cheered a lot and made a lot of racket. Not negative, but it has to be said, a lot of positive noise coming from that away end. And Villa come out in the second half looking to do some damage, and they did. No booing, mate. Really loud. Just a general scream and roar of encouragement, which is good to see. No booing. Nothing. The players were clearly disappointed with themselves and just having arguments amongst each other. Dean Smith wasn't happy, but the away following really got behind them. Really did. And Villa come out in the second half and scored. And man, it was a moment of magic because El Ghazi gets the ball and all he does is run and run and run. Just beats everyone. Cuts it across the box for Jonathan Codger, I believe, who misses it completely, just falls over. But that man is there, Albert Adoma, and it's just too easy for him. And gets his first goal of the season.
A little bit of energy.
And it's
a little bit of energy, right? Everybody's running into the box there. And you can do that because there's two strikers. There's two strikers on the pitch, and then you've got Adoma coming on from the right-hand side. Look, we simply cannot control the midfield as a three. It's not happening. So at least try to, you know, at least try to go a little bit further forward with it. You know, try something a little bit different. Attack. And I think that's the reason why we were able to get the goal there. You know, there were so many bodies. Stoke City didn't quite know what to do there in terms of the marking. I don't know if you remember exactly how the goal went, but, like, you know, as you say, El Ghazi's running with it. Runs and runs and runs. Stoke are panicking. All their guys get into the box. But, you know, it's some sort of weird zonal marking that they basically end up doing, whereby, like, you know, they're not actually able to catch any of Villa's runners. And I think that's the kind of way that Villa get beat so often. I mean, it was the main way that Volk scored earlier, right? But it's just a little bit more energy. Come at them. You know, throw everybody at it, and surely, you know, you get one sort of lucky touch and it goes in the back of the net. And finally, Adoma gets his goal this season. And I just really hope that this is the start of him, getting into his groove again. Because when Odoma does get confident, man, does he get confident.
Yeah, we really need someone to start scoring who isn't Tammy Abraham, and maybe Odoma isn't always has been the perfect candidate. He's been really unlucky this season. He hasn't been in good form at all, and he's had some bad games. But he's got his first goal, and he's always, you know, he's been on for that all season, and it just hasn't happened. And now he has happened. Let's see what he can do. But man, the Stoke game surely is a lot more positive now. Surely we are all feeling a bit more positive about Villa after that.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And it was good seeing El Ghazi playing so well as well. You know, I think this is the first time in the last three matches that we actually look like we wanted to win. I think that, you know, players getting annoyed at themselves and actually starting to, you know, tear each other up a little bit at halftime. Good. You know, we can't accept this mediocrity. You can't accept, you know, trying to, you know, scrape back from 1-0 down all the time. It just shouldn't be happening. And I'm glad that, you know, after everything that was so unlucky in that first half, that guys like El Ghazi kept on running with it. Guys like Glenn Whelan as well. Fair play to him holding his own in that two-man midfield, because I didn't know if he was going to be able to.
For sure. But in general, I'm feeling really good about Villa. That result helped. And I won't accept a lot of negativity from that result, because I think Villa really fought hard for it, and a lot of people weren't able to watch it and weren't really in the mindset of allowing Villa to succeed in their mind. You know, we got win, lose, or draw. They weren't pretty much there for any positivity. But to see Villa fight back, and they almost went on to win the match. There's not a lot of incidents we can speak about. But Tyrone Mings, you know, is stopped late on by Jack Butland, of course, wearing the Gordon Banks jersey. Of course, rest in peace, Gordon Banks, who passed away over the last 2 weeks. Stoke's tribute to them was a living goalkeeper who kept them in the game. And Villa would have won that match if it wasn't for Jack Butland. So the big takeaway from that is, you know, another team stepped up to stop Villa. And that's something, you know, how often do we have to make another team work for something? And we might have to make Stoke work for that point.
Yeah, and look, Stoke have been in bad form as well. You know, they for them, a 1-1 draw was big. You know, they weren't going to let themselves lose. You know, the fans have been on their backs. You know, they're under severe pressure at the moment as well. So, you know, Gary Rowett, you know, big pressure for him, man. Really is under some serious pressure over there.
He got sacked.
Oh, sorry, he did, didn't he?
Nathan Jones, yeah. He's already under pressure. There's a lot of, the point still stands that he's under pressure, no matter who it is. Gary Rowett got sacked. The new guys coming, like Nathan Jones, and he's already under massive pressure, more so than Dean Smith, it seems. He's under, you know, a lot of pressure, you know, over at the Bet365, almost at Britannia. Again, then, it's a Bet365 stadium now. And yeah, we're Nathan still thinking about Stoke in the past, mate. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, it wasn't.
No, I was as well. I called the stadium the wrong name. Yeah.
Well, you know, Stoke City stuck in the past. That's what it is. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I mean, Nathan Jones, when he came in from Luton, and obviously it was a big thing for them as well, because they've reached into the lower divisions to grab him. And I don't think he so far has seemed to be able to take on that challenge. Basically, Rowett left them in a bad situation, but yeah, I mean, I don't think either of them were the right candidates for Stoke City. They're almost trying to reinvent themselves a little bit, but they've still got a lot of, I think, suffering a lot from what we had and what Sunderland had as well. They've got a lot of Premier League players in that team who aren't quite up for the fight. And I don't think a guy like Nathan Jones is going to get it out of them, unfortunately. He, like Dean Smith, works with players who, you know, perhaps are taught to overachieve a little bit, you know, hungry players who are motivated because they've never seen those sorts of heights of success before. I think he's gonna keep on struggling there as well, for now anyway.
I think it's worth giving it a match ball then for this game. It was largely positive. I think there's a few candidates to consider, but for me, mate, my match ball probably has to go to Albert Odoma. First goal of the season, hustled all match, came on for Alan Hutton early on, and got his goal, was in the right place at the right time to take advantage of a team for once, and can't look past him. I think there's a few candidates, and I think they're all worthy, but I'd like to afford Albert Odoma his first match ball of the season.
Yeah, I like that one. I think I agree with you. There are a few candidates, and I think one of Courtney House or Tyrone Mings is going to have to miss out here. But I've got to go El Ghazi for the second one. Yeah, he missed that easy opportunity, but he never stopped running. He tried really hard from that left-hand position. I think he really stepped up to the plate as the main playmaker. He really did. You know, he was the most important player on the pitch for Villa in that game. And he really did understand his place in that side. And I got to give it to El Ghazi for that. I mean, even setting up that goal for Adoma in the second half.
So we come together to give one. I think Mings and House of Birth both deserving of one, but I have to give one to Courtney Horse, I think. Coming, he was criticised, wasn't he? He didn't have a good game against Brentford at all. Really bad game.
That was stupid.
He's growing into the role, and I think he's looking quite a left back at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Brentford game was silly. I don't know. I don't know how you can criticise the defender for coming on, you know, with half an hour to go whilst we're under severe pressure and the rest of the team aren't exactly inspiring him. Forget that Brentford game. I never used it at any point to judge Courtney Horse. At left back, he's looking far more solid than Neil Taylor was. I think as long as we can get some more movement out of Courtney, in the sense that, you know, he hasn't been running around a lot. He hasn't been playing much football. If he turns out to be a little bit more agile and a little bit more versatile, then yeah, he could be a fantastic left back for us. And you're right, you know, under some pressure, he's turned up. And he's been solid, basically, for the most part. And Stoke City couldn't really get past him much. Him and Mings, both on that left-hand side, were fantastic. But I'm down with giving the third one to Courtney Horse.
So let's get on to the final topic of this edition of the Hulkcast. I think we need to preview Villa's upcoming match against Derby County. Do you reckon it's another pivotal game for Aston Villa, but do you think this one could possibly be the turning point that they need?
What makes you say that, then, James?
What makes you say what?
That it could be the turning point.
Well, if Villa win, do you think this is the source of optimism that can buoy the season and possibly push them onto a playoff place?
I mean, like, it's about when that win comes, and I think it's a tough one. I think we've still got no John McGinn, right? But hopefully that forces Dean to go with the 4-4-2 again. I think it could be the key. I really do think it could be the key. You know, it also opens up opportunities for any sort of young strikers we have to maybe come on and try to grab a goal as well. But like, I think if we go into Derby County and think about it like this, you know, we need to get the 3 points. If we play like we did against Stoke City in that second half, we'll be fine. And I think now that Albert Adoma has a goal, we play him. We play El Mohammedi at right back, Adoma on the right hand side, El Ghazi on the left hand side, right. Stretch play a little bit and basically play with a little bit more positivity. If we get a win against Derby County, 100%, it could be a turning point. And I don't think we go back to playing in the same sort of negative way as we did before. What we need is a big win, though. We need to win by 2 goals. And I think we really could start seeing us playing well again. Because I am still of the opinion that everything that's going on with us right now is all about confidence and motivation.
Villa are 6 points behind Derby County and obviously could make up some ground there. But Derby have got 2 games in hand based on their performances in the League Cup and FA Cup that have kept them out of Championship competition for two rounds. So they could stick, you know, we're 6 points behind and it could be, at worst case scenario, 12 points behind. So we've got some ground to make up on. And if you're going to make up that ground, you have to beat that team. If we're going to make up on Derby, we have to, you know, beat them. On Saturday, right?
Well, yeah, but and don't forget that they have Nottingham Forest before us as well. So that could be a big factor as to how they play against us on Saturday. So I'd say big up Nottingham Forest this week. Right, let's hope that they can grab 3 points against them.
Yeah, for sure. In that East Midlands derby, I think we'll be rooting for Nottingham Forest. But Villa versus Derby, that's a home game for Villa on Saturday, 3 p.m. It's a massive one. Again, I think every game out here is a big one for Villa, not just in terms of league position and promotion, but in terms of optimism. And, you know, the home games are getting a bit agonising at the moment, right? The atmosphere around them is It's nothing to write home about. Yeah, and I don't like going every week. To be honest, I mean, it's not because of even the team. It's just the moaning and the, you know, just the atmosphere. It's just a bad vibes, man. Don't really want to be doing it. Last Saturday, I got my Xbox and I was playing Crackdown or something. And I was thinking, this is just the life. I have to go to Villa Park now. And I'm not feeling happy about the team. I'm not feeling positive. But I do love Aston Villa. I do like spending time with my dad and my stepbrothers as well. But it's just, at what cost, man? At what cost?
I think we all know that the club's going through a little bit of a tough time at the moment, right? But let's be real for a second. I don't think any of us are scared.
No.
You know, the feeling that we had at the start of the season, and perhaps near the end of, I mean, last, you know, after the playoffs, was that financially we're in a position where we're not able to sustain ourselves. This club could die. Right, we could be getting liquidated. We could end up, you know, getting points taken off us. We could end up going to League One. That's not where we are right now. Yeah, it's bad. But it's bad because we know something isn't quite right on the pitch. Can that be fixed? Yes. If financials are bad, and if we've got a squad full of players that we can't replace, that's something bad, right? But I think where we are right now with young players coming through like Andre Green, when, you know, we're getting the players and the big wages off, you know, we've got guys like Freddy Gilbert coming in, you know, once Hutton's off. I think that we know that things aren't great on the pitch right now, but we're seeing the club through a tough time. But we're going to be okay at the end of it. And it is, right now, all it is bad form. And form changes at the click of a button. You can't fix things like bad financials overnight. Form, I genuinely believe you can.
He's hoping, mate. Well, he's hoping it all turns around. But for the final act of the podcast, can you please give me your prediction for Villa versus Derby? Or do you want me to go first if you're not feeling it?
Do you want to give your prediction first? I don't mind.
Trying to catch you out. I thought I'd just rattle you because I did get the last one, right, 1-1 against Stoke, and Phil did as well.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Producer Phil did.
Oh God, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure.
I got nil. I said nil.
You
nil,
got
didn't
the result
I?
Right, but not the scoreline. So
no, exactly. Am I behind yet on the prediction?
No, I think we're all even at one apiece now.
Ooh, we'll have to get Trev. I mean, we've done well there.
Producer Trev can, of course, update us with that. Thank you very much, Trevor, for updating the Predictions League over the course of the season. I think he can give us results. I think it might be 1-1, 1-1.
I mean, that's dire, though, isn't it? It's dire.
That's bad.
It's dire. Like, that's awful. We might not even be able to reach Derby's point tally at the end of the old 07-08 season.
No. If, you know, that's one win each, that's 3 points apiece, and we've only got a few months left. We've only got,
yeah, I don't think,
what,
it's happening.
10 games. everyone needs to be, well, we got the right results, we just haven't got the right scorelines. But scorelines is what it's all about. I'm gonna go for another 1-1.
Yeah, look, Derby haven't been scoring many goals recently. You know, I think since their win over Accrington in the FA Cup, I think they've only been scoring one a game. That includes a 1-0 defeat to Millwall and a 1-1 draw with Ipswich. Sandwiched in between that, of course, was a 2-1 defeat to Brighton in the FA Cup, who obviously are a Premier League side. But I don't think Derby are playing with an awful lot of confidence at the moment. I think the only player maybe that you look at in that team and think, you know, there's a goal coming at the moment is sorry, give me a second, his name is stuck in my head. It is Harry Wilson, right?
The young lad on loan.
He came off. After
10 goals this season. That's fair.
Yeah, they're not looking good at the moment. I think they probably were expecting a bit more out of Jack Marriott, who perhaps hasn't been scoring as many as we would have hoped in Championship. But I just think that right now neither of us really scoring a lot of goals. I do hope that it's the start of a run for us though. And for the final, I'd say maybe a month, I'm going to be positive and go with a 2-0 Villa then. Yeah. I think that I'm going to change tact. Because whilst I've been predicting draws, we've been getting draws. So I'm going to go with a Villa win. I think that it's another team who just aren't scoring that many goals at the moment. And I don't think they're an incredibly attacking side at the moment. I think Frank Lampard is genuinely struggling to get them to play how he wants to. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. Final thoughts are that I still, you can call me a denialist if you want. I just think we're going through bad form. Yeah, it is ruining. It is ruining the season because we're not going to reach playoffs, and I'll say that. But I don't think that we're awful. I think we're just hibernating. And I think once a couple of the players start grabbing goals, we'll be okay. This side, after preseason, is going to be perfectly fine. I'm just watching the season go by for now. And I'm going to do the typical managerial thing and say, I'm not looking at the table. But, you know, at least let's see some performances, some better performances. I think that's all we're hoping for right now. I want to see more Andre Green on the pitch. I think that's one thing. I want to see more Andre Green, and I want to see more Keenan Davis as well. That's about it.
Can't help but agree, mate. So thank you very much for coming on today. We'll see you again. I believe after Aston Villa played Derby, so that'll be next Sunday. And fingers crossed for some 3 points. I'd like to see a win at some point. I've been James Rushton, that's Danny Riser, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.